Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Goldpine. Goldpine is a songwriting duo based here out of Nashville.
If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances from all of our guests, including Goldpine. Like, subscribe, follow, all of that stuff. It helps us out a ton. Now to the show. Yeah, so we kind of go all over the place. We learned very quickly that this is more fun if we just kind of talk about whatever.
Yeah, what were we talking about before we went off the rails with aliens? Oh, yeah, the duo
Mike
thing.
Stands.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the duo.
How long has the duo existed?
We've been around. So Goldpine has been around for 4 years, I would say.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But we were a duo before that. We were called My One and Only before that for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And then before that, we did solo, separate stuff.
Nice. So you guys have had some real time to acclimate with playing with each other. Because that's hard. Yeah. When it's two people, I mean, there's a lot riding on musical chemistry, you know?
And we've been married for 16 years.
Yeah. Okay.
So that we just celebrated our... So we've been partners, real duo partners for 16 years.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Were you guys always a duo, or did you ever have a full band going, or...?
Never did the full band. It was like... We can't afford it.
Yeah.
It's so
hard. We tour
hard,
all
yeah.
the time. And
so much more to juggle. And
yeah. I don't know how people do that. I feel like if we, as much as we tour, like we would just be in the hole.
Yeah.
We'd be in the red
yeah.
if we, so I don't know.
Plus,
maybe in the future we'll
we
see
We can't
what happens.
Fit them in the van.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
You guys put them up in hotels.
The van life that you guys were laying out earlier, that's the move. That really is. That's the way to do it.
Honestly, the van has been the single most thing in our music career that has furthered our music career. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. single most thing is the van, the tour van.
Yeah.
Because we would not be able to be traveling as much as we do. We don't go in the hole. We can make it sustainable. Mm-hmm. I mean, before we had the van, I never would have thought that would have been like the hinge pin of being
successful. So how long ago did you guys get the van? When did that pivot happen?
It'll be 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next month.
Yeah.
When you bought it and started building it out.
Yes.
We just bought it.
Well, I had another one before that. But.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Yeah.
This is our third van. Yeah. But we've been touring to this level for like 3 years.
3 years full-time on the road.
Like,
that's
the
awesome.
Over 200 shows a year.
That's amazing. One of the things I also want to ask you guys, one of the things I love about playing over a long duration of time with the same person or people is that you really get to your shorthand becomes really, really precise. Mm. Like for me, like Brian and I have played together for more than a decade now. Like every gig I've played in 10 plus years, Brian has played it. Mm. And one of the things that's great about that is your shorthand is such that I don't need to translate ideas. Brian's just, he knows what I'm going to do before I do it. And there's something really freeing about just being able to explore the ideas. It feels almost like the ideas are so much more accessible when you're not having to stumble through that translation. Mm-hmm. For you guys, because you've obviously been doing this together a long while, when did it feel for you like you started to kind of get in that rhythm of being a duo? Because I mean, from all the live stuff I've heard, all the record, I mean, it's obviously there. When did you feel like you started to scratch the surface of that?
I don't know.
That's a tough question. I think it's a slow, gradual process. Like when we first decided to become a duo, we didn't think it was really even going to be possible. We came from mm-hmm. totally separate backgrounds of music and styles and ways of saying things in different parts of the country. And so we finally got over that hump of being able to songwrite together. And I think slowly, gradually, we are over the course of a couple years after becoming My One and Only, we started to, okay, we're syncing with each other now, singing-wise and songwriting-wise. But I think we're still not there yet. I think we'll just never be completely there. We're just continuing to
ever evolving
to evolve.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a good healthy mindset. That why the pivot from my one and only to Gold Pine? Like, why did that transition?
Yeah,
occur?
Ben, why?
Oh, jeez, well. I'm scratching on here. Jeez.
No, I just he tells the story better.
Okay.
Well, so if you ever tried to come up with a band name, and maybe you have, it's really difficult.
Oh God, it's the worst thing in the world.
I'm so bad at coming up with names
it's
for music.
Horrendous. Well, worst. You can't even name songs. You're bad with
I get it. Yeah.
Because and then when you do go through that whole process and you feel like you've landed on one, then you look back and you're like, "Why did I do that? Why did I choose that name?"
Yeah.
And that for me, that's what happened with my one and only. Mm-hmm. There were several behind the. Meanings to the name, but the only thing that people would hear when we would go up on stage is someone would introduce us. Now, make welcome my one and only, and then all the women in the crowd would just go, "Oh, that is so sweet," and like that's not at all what I thought would happen with that name. I don't know why I didn't think that.
It didn't bother me.
We're a married couple, you know.
Yeah.
So. It's just, I was think we were trying to go for something a little bit more edgy, a little bit more mysterious, and hence the change to Gold Pine.
Where'd that name come from?
Yeah, Gold Cass.
Oh, oh.
Where'd that name come from?
So I, first of all, I was very resistant because I didn't want to start over.
Yeah, even something as simple as that. Something as simple as rename.
Just,
it can. We'll have fights when it's like, okay. Or maybe not fights, but at this point, Brian and Alexa and I have known each other long enough. They're fights. We want to change up the thumbnail look for the pod. It's like changing the name of something. That's a big step.
It's completely starting over. I mean, you know, you have to start over with everything. If you think about it, your website, your like all the, every contact you've ever had knows you from your old email. You got to change. It was just, anyway, so I was resistant, but I'm so glad we did. It's been great. I'm totally glad that we did it. So anyways, I grew up on Pines Road in Alabama. So that's like the past. And then gold is the element that refines when it goes through hard times like of the fire. It just makes it better and purifies it. And we hope that that's our future. And then we just made up our own word.
I love that. Gold that's Pines. Fantastic. I love it.
And it's cool. It's unique.
Yeah, it's a good name.
And it matches our music, I feel like.
Yeah, I really
better.
Think it does. It's a very... I can see how the sort of on the branding level of things, my one and only great name, but I can see how it might not have, might not have gelled in the same way.
And a mouthful. It was a mouthful. Everybody got it wrong.
Yeah.
They're like, my only.
Yeah. I think people should like start naming their own, like fans should name the bands they listen to. That's what I think would work.
Put it up to
just
a
put
vote.
It up. No, not even like, it's like whatever you want to call us. Like that's what you call us. Yeah. You know? That's kind of, what are both of your individual music backgrounds, because you were saying that you guys kind of come from different origin stories. What were your guys' different types of music?
Yeah, so I grew up in Alabama, and I just remember like sitting in the living room, and there was like the 5-disc CD player, and I remember like when it would go around with my mom and dad's music. So they really opened me up to all kinds of stuff because it would be like Toby Keith, Clarence Carter, Eric Clapton. You know, Lionel Richie. And it was just like this whole eclectic mix. So I was really just liking and hearing a lot of things. But what I really gravitated towards and what I loved the most was R&B and soul. So like my favorite band of all time is Boyz II Men. Like
nice.
I love them. and I just loved like, you know, Ray Charles and, you know, Whitney Houston and stuff like that. And it just, that was my favorite. And that's really kind of what I, maybe was a pretty big influence of mine. Mm-hmm. Of course, country and also, but like, that's why, like when we were, before we were a solo artist, I did country soul. So that's kind of how I described
my
music.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I am kind of a sucker for that kind of music. I love soul music, R&B music. That's a lot of what I listened to growing up. So I just have such a soft spot for that. And I love it, but I can get down with some country music like that. That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
What about you?
Growing up, my family really only listened to CCM. So Christian contemporary music. They really didn't listen to anything else. And then in high school, I branched out to like some alternative rock. Counting Crows was like my best discovery and influence for in my high school years.
Nice.
Love them. So I didn't really have a diverse background in music. Mm-hmm. I don't have a diverse background in music. And
words are hard.
I didn't know anything about country music when I moved to Nashville. Mm-mm. Like nothing.
That's nothing honestly probably all. A big, big benefit in a strange way. There's got to be kind of something ways, nice maybe. About that.
Yeah. Except for I got to Nashville. I moved here to go to audio production school.
Oh, okay.
And then people would be talking about like famous country artists. I'm like, I don't know who these people are.
Yeah.
Even classic country artists. Like I knew nothing. So now I'm, you know, listening to alternative folk rock and Americana stuff. But big influences on me now were songwriters like John Prine, Lucinda Williams. Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm into now. So
that's a good combination right there. There's some good ingredients. When you started songwriting together, that's I think a big step for anyone who writes songs or just makes music is to sort of creatively collaborate in that way. What were the hurdles that you found sitting down? And because I find for myself like what I love is songwriting, but I really have difficulty doing that with other people. To me, it's not because really solely because I like the process of doing it in isolation. I like the system that I have for things. So it's very few and far between, if ever, that I sit down with someone and try to collaborate in that way. When you guys made that conscious effort to sit down and try to, okay, square one, there's no song. How are we going to go about doing this? What's the process now? How do you do that on a sort of nuts and bolts level? How do you collaborate with someone like that?
How did we do that?
In the beginning?
Yeah.
In the beginning, we had a mentor that really poured into us, and he basically just said, go write a bunch of songs together and bring them back to me. Mm-hmm. And we really were just like, how do we even start this? Like, where do we go? We're so different, because I did country soul. He did alternative folk rock. But I will say that when we started it at the beginning, it was kind of hard. It was like trying to get over all these speed. It was like just driving down a road full of speed bumps, mm-hmm. which nobody likes speed bumps. We want to speed, you know? And so, but then like once we got over that hump and realized that our strengths were that we're so different, because no matter how we'd be writing and I would come up with an idea, well, he would never say it the way I would say it and vice versa. And so like, it would just always be kind of fresh and like a new way to say things and mixing our Southern and Midwest style together and the way we speak.
Midwest. What's the Midwest style, by the way?
Well,
I want to know what
that
is.
We just are different. We're different. You know, it's like, you know, corn and cotton. That's, you know, it just is what it is. But once we got over that hump, I don't know, it just worked. And it still works. It wasn't easy at first, but nothing ever is. And so we just keep writing songs and go back to him. And he'd be like, write some more. And then he'd be like, write a Christmas song. Do this, do this. And I mean, he would give us assignments and he really poured into us. And I'm really grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And now we just do it. It works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's great that you found a rhythm with that. That's really wonderful. Do you, when you're writing, do you find that, I'm really fascinated with this in a duo context where there's two minds at work, but, a lot of people I find are more lyric first. A lot of people are more melody first or even harmony first. For you guys, do you find that there are any kind of patterns like that with yourselves, or because there's two of you, do you find that it's just sort of up in the air, whatever form this song initially takes, that's just the way we're going to follow it?
I think both of us are lyric first. Mm-hmm. Yes. Lyric first, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially you.
I don't play guitar or piano.
Yeah. So Cassie writes a lot when she's very inspired by something, whether that's very tragic or something going on in the family. Like she has a song about her mother that passed a few years back on the second album that won us a songwriting contest. Way to go, by the way. It's good. And so that's the kind of thing, you know, that she writes about. And I'm always looking for ideas throughout the day for whether it's like just inconsistencies in the culture or ironies and stuff like that. Or like I hear a song and I think they say one thing, but they actually don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I can take that idea now.
That's the best feeling. Yeah,
I love
that. That happens sometimes. You think, I love when that happens. You think, God, my line is so much better.
Right. Exactly. So they should have read this, but I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I'm always writing down these ideas in my iPhone notes, and then simultaneously throughout the years, if I am at a gig during sound check and I'm like, oh, this guitar looks cool, then I'm recording that lick on my iPhone in my iPhone voice memos, mm-hmm. and sometimes those match up. Like, oh, I have this idea. Let me see what my next music idea was that I. And then like, oh, these fit. You know?
The iPhone is the greatest musician assistant of all time.
Yeah,
oh my God. When I stopped writing everything like in notebooks and just went to my notes app and oh my God, it was the greatest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's such a nice feeling.
And the voice memos are a big deal.
My voice memos go back a long ways. And
mine too.
I love that thing. That is amazing. Because I'll do it like when I'm driving the car, I'll have like a melody in my head and you can just sing it or whatever. And otherwise I'd be gone. I would never remember those things for the life of me. Oh, it's so nice. It's mm-hmm. so nice. So one of the things that I think is fantastic just as a consumer, I love the names of your last two albums. I think that's, I think it's hilarious. I think it's great. First of all, do I know what the next album is going to be called yet? Or?
You do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just making,
you
I'm making sure.
You know what the next Infinity
album is. Perfect. I kind of love that though. Where did you, how did you decide to call the first album one and second one two, et cetera?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
See, I kind of hate that Zeppelin. I hate that like Zeppelin stopped doing that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, here's what's crazy. I think it might have been my idea.
I think it was because you were thinking about Adele, who named her albums after her age.
Oh, okay.
1921 or whatever she had.
1921, 26.
And then Taylor Swift named some albums Colors.
Yes, that's right.
And so you were like, what could we do that's something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. We just named
and
them
and we didn't know that Zeppelin did it.
Oh, okay. There
so
you
that's
go.
What's crazy.
That's kind of great, though. Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. You know, that's nice. As someone who hasn't done that in the past, it does come up with names for them. I kind of like that. And at this point, I'm screwed. I can't just start with four now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, I can't be like, okay, here's the next one. Here's four. It doesn't make any sense.
And we're going to do that till we're dead.
I love that. Yeah. I love just committing to the bit. There's nothing like committing to the bit.
And just think, we don't have to think about a name for our album. Like,
that is nice.
We
that's
literally
a big deal,
know
yeah.
the
that
kind of
frees
album.
You up a little bit.
If somebody's listening to stuff, I kind of want people to know what our older stuff is compared to our newer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, like we said earlier, we're evolving all the time. And so there's stuff on our younger records that are older records.
some
younger.
Of our
first records. Been around for a while, yeah.
That I wish was different, you know, because we were younger at the time. And so I love the idea that, they can listen to one and know, oh, yeah, it was their first thing. But they can listen to 10 in the future and be like, oh, this is where they've evolved to. Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
Yeah, there's something about giving it the context of...
Right.
Giving that listener the context and understanding of where this falls in the mm-hmm. continuum. That is mm-hmm. that is nice. Tell me about the last single that you guys put out, the live one, that you guys also just recorded, which sounded awesome. Give me the rundown on how you guys did that, because it sounds phenomenal. Like, it sounds really, really great.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's a song called The Stumbling Stone. Is that the one you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, yeah.
We have had that song in some way for probably 10 years and tried to record it so many times and felt like it wasn't sitting right. But it's a special song to us. We've ended all of our live sets on that song probably for three or 5 years or something like that. And it's just a big deal. The stumbling stone is a metaphor in scriptures. That's one of my favorite metaphors. And it says, Jesus was the stumbling stone the builders rejected. And I loved that idea. And digging into it, it was like it became a very important thing to me because I realized that what it was talking about was that people who... in essence, try to pull themselves up by their bootstraps or try to save themselves by the things that they're doing, stumble over the solution, which was Jesus. And there's a freedom in knowing that. A freedom in knowing that grace is a thing that initially has nothing to do with what you've done. It's what he has done. And there's such a freedom there that I didn't know for a lot of my life. And still, I think, am learning on it. So, powerful song for us.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Thank you.
It's. I mean, it sounds fantastic. It's one of those songs where when it's over and the audience starts applauding, you think, that was live? Like that's. I think that's just an awesome thing. That's such a hard thing to pull off. Do you guys ever feel, because you were a duo, and this is something that you're going to have to take on the road in front of an audience with the two of you on stage, do you ever feel limited with what you can get away with in the studio, how you can frame a song, or does it feel, or does that kind of constraint actually feel like in the pro column?
That's an interesting topic, because it's one I've been thinking about over our albums. We do a duo thing in live performances, obviously. And for most of what we've recorded, I tried to keep our recordings somewhat true to what we do live so that it doesn't feel like someone heard us on Spotify and then they come see us live and they're like,
yeah, it's not jarring.
Where's Gold Pine at? Now, I do add, as you've heard, I do add some stuff on the recordings, but I try consciously not to add stuff that's going to be very key things to the songs. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to make decisions based on that. I feel like I could add just a ton of stuff and do really elaborate stuff, but I don't want to be untrue to what we do.
It feels like it rides that line really beautifully of giving... you know what? It's kind of, to use Zeppelin as an example, because we were talking about them. It's kind of, I think all bands do this to some degree or another, where, you know, maybe John Paul Jones is playing the bass and he's also playing a keyboard part where you're just not going to have that, you know, like that kind of thing. Or Jimmy's layering some guitar track. I think that stuff can add to the textures of a recording on an album. But you guys do a really beautiful job of, when I listen to those and then listening to you guys in the room or even just hearing live footage of you guys, there's not a disconnect there, which is, I think that's a hard balance to strike. One of the things we were actually talking about with our last guest that we had in here is, I really feel that one of the things that's the most useful in music, and this is probably true of things outside of music as well, but knowing kind of where the boundaries are and kind of boxing yourself in, not creatively, but giving yourself an idea of the framework that you're working within can be really powerful, because once you know where those edges are, then you can play. And right. And you can, if you want to, then you can, those edges are malleable and you can change those things. But if everything's on the table, and this is especially hard in the time that we're living in now with just, you could essentially do anything you want in a recording studio. It's like, it's all up for grabs. I think having that focus and giving yourself those limitations can actually be creatively hugely freeing. I imagine being in a duo almost just makes that even more, hyper-realized. The fact that, you know, okay, we're going to go on stage, the two of us, and we're going to have to pull this off. When your songwriting, does that enter into the equation at all, or are you just trying to write the best song that you can?
The songwriting includes that whole topic too, because even songs that we're looking at for the next record, as I'm writing the song, I'm thinking about how can we do this live that's also going to be exciting as a recording. So all those things are going into my mind. And as I'm writing the song, I'm thinking about how it fits into the flow of the live show. So like, maybe we need like a great closer or something like that, you know? And so you're writing for that particular purpose, not just because I was inspired to write about whatever. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that you write when you're on the road? Do you find when you're right at home? I'm always curious what that routine is for people, because it can vary so much. Some people, especially road dogs, they get into that habit of being able to write on the road. Some people just will wait until they're back into the comfort of home, and they don't want to worry about that when they're in that mindset. They're just focusing on touring. Do you two have any kind of patterns that you found for yourselves with that, or is it more just left to sort of chance and inspiration?
Well, if we waited till we were home, we would never have an album.
Yep, talking to you guys before we started rolling, it seems like that. Yeah.
So, but Ben is really good at carving out and being intentional with songwriting. So on the road, our life looks like we normally play anywhere from 3 to 5 shows a week. And then we are our team. So then when we're not playing, we spend 8 hours a day doing PR, booking, all meta ads, all that stuff, marketing, and then also putting in songwriting in there. And he's really good at that. So the one thing we don't have in our van is a shower. And so we go to Planet Fitness every day, and they're all over. Shout out Planet Fitness. And so that's like our alone time. But also that's when I'm inside, Ben will come back out, and he's really intentional with songwriting. And what's crazy to me is like our album 3 doesn't come out till July the 11th. And Ben has been just pushing to write song for 4. And I'm like, our song.
Smart man.
I'm like, see? Can see we have a there? Break? Yeah. I mean, we've already got like 5 or 6 songs. And I'm like, the album's not even out. And he's like, well, we got to just keep being ahead of it. And I'm like, man. So he's really good at that. I'm not as good at that. So basically, Ben will do most of the work and then come back and he lets me hear it. And then I'm like, do you need to do this, or it's do this, or let's change this. And then I just kind of put a bow on it. So
I like it. That's a good system right there. That's a good process.
He's keeping us working.
Another thing that I think is really fascinating to talk about, and this is the stuff that it may not seem as exciting or sexy or whatever, but the as a musician, there's so much more that goes into the process, obviously, than just being on stage for that 2 hours every day and performing. There's just 99% of the job is not that, right?
Right.
On the sort of back end of things, all of the the emails you've got to send, the booking you got to square away, the social media crap that you've got to figure out how you're gonna do. What have you two found is your best approach for handling all of that stuff? Because I also don't know what what other sort of outside help you have, because some people are very hands on and just do the majority of that stuff themselves. Other people have other management teams and crap like that kind of help with particular tasks. What is your guys' relationship to all that? How do you tackle all of the crud that is actually being a musician?
Well, like I said, we are our team. We do everything. We do have a booking agent, CMC, in Nashville, and but they only book like our bigger opening act stuff, festivals, our bigger.
Okay.
Bigger gigs. And Ben does all the rest. And, we're playing over 200 shows
that's
a year.
That's insane. Like, so that is doing that's amazing. All
that. That's crazy.
That's amazing.
He books all that. And then I do all the social media as far as like posting and reels and interacting with the fans. Mm-hmm. And then Ben does all of the rest. What do you do, Ben?
Booking, marketing, promo,
mm-hmm.
All the hats.
I guess another way of, and first of all, that's amazing. I mean, people really, truly, that's one of the reasons why I like doing the show is people don't realize, unless you're in this world and this is what you do, people don't realize how much blood, sweat, and tears goes into being able to do this. I mean, and that's so much work.
Even musicians don't realize.
Oh, yeah,
it.
For sure.
Yeah.
We were musicians for many years, even touring, and didn't realize the amount of promo that we should have been doing for our shows. A lot, That there's probably a lot of musicians out there who get shows booked and then just do a little, like make a Facebook event and whatever and hope people come out. Mm-hmm. But man, you can grab a hold of marketing and you can grab a hold of promo and make what you want to happen happen. Mm-hmm. It's a slow process and it's a learning process, but there's so much that you can do.
What are some of the ways you do that, like specifically?
Just well,
getting people to come out.
I have an entire Excel spreadsheet of everything promo-wise that we do for the tour. And it lists every show, and it probably has 20 different rows of things that we need to do for each show. But I would say one of the main things that I've learned recently is the power of meta ads.
Mm.
And I, not literally, but basically went back to school learning digital marketing in the last couple years. And it I never thought like a marketer before, but now after that, like everything is like thinking like marketing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is exciting, actually, yeah. The marketing stuff. And we're seeing a lot of really great results from that marketing to the places that we're going to. Mm-hmm. And for ticket sales, and you do it with very specific parameters and very specific ways. And it's been very beneficial for us. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
But there's so many other things on the list.
Yeah, that's something. I mean, that's stuff we've talked about too. I mean, just
it's definitely something we need to get into for this podcast.
No, it's been interesting doing this because in some ways it is kind of like having a band. You know, like doing this silly show is kind of like having a band. And so on one hand, it's fantastic because like being in a band, you've got multiple heads to to pull together and problem solve. But it has been a tricky puzzle to solve too, and I mean it, like anything, it takes time. But seeing what is the best, that's one of the things that's been fun about bringing people in here, is we can pick people's minds and be like, right. So how are you doing this?
Right.
But I guess if you kind of had to give advice to a young up-and-coming songwriter or band, or even yourselves back in the day, what would you tell that actor or artist to focus on? Where do you think when people are starting out and just trying to find their footing and find their voice, what do you think is the best, what are the best avenues to go?
Boy, there'd be so many.
There's so many.
Do you have one you're thinking of?
Well, I'm probably going to take yours, but I'll just say it and then you can talk about it. But, persistence, like the follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Like so many people that we talk to will be like, yeah, I reached out to such and such venue and I never heard back from them. And we were like, and I'd be like, well, did you follow up?
15 well, no. times.
Yeah. And they're like, right. No. And we're like, I mean, that has been, we were at a panel at Americana Fest, I don't know how many years ago. And, it was John Prine's son, one of them, and he was over the label of Oh Boy Records, and he was the one speaking, saying that, wasn't it him talking about the follow-up? And,
it was another person, but
on
ahead.
That panel. But anyways, what did they say?
In that particular one, this booking agent said they sent an email out, and then they follow up once a week seven times. And that kind of was the beginning of opening my mind to, like, oh, okay. Literally nobody gets back on the first email. Mm-hmm. But the whole persistence thing is across the board. Songwriting. Right, and this is for me too, like writing more and more. This is what I'm aspiring to, is I want to write way more songs than I need for the album and then whittle them down.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be better than just
absolutely.
Having written 10. Mm-hmm. Or so persistence in songwriting, just continuing to write or continuing to stay at it. If you want a career in Nashville, there's so many people who move here for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And they're like, gosh, nothing's happening, And then they'll go back to whatever. And if they have talent and they want to do something, I think you have to think about persistence in the long game. You're mm-hmm. talking, I think you need to think about 15 years. Like just building and building and building. persistence is so everything. Much yeah. about
I think,
everything.
I think that's true of every element of life. I mean, that's one of the things we talked about a lot when we started doing this is I was saying to them, I was like, guys, we're not going to see any success in this thing for a while. It's going to be slow. Now, I think we've seen more success in some ways than I probably would have thought we would have, but it's a slow burn. It's one of those mm-hmm. things where you just kind of have to keep your head down and just, I think you have to just be in love with the process of doing the thing.
Sure.
And whatever that thing is, right? Whether it's this, whether it's music, whatnot, you just have to enjoy the process of the thing and knowing that you are slowly but steadily getting better at that thing. That goes a long way because if you're just, it can be hard when you're so passionate about something. You want to see the payoff, right? You want to see, oh, I'm putting all this damn time in. I want to get something out of it. When it doesn't work like that, you just have to be accepting of the payoff is the fact that you're improving at this thing that you care about. Now, as a byproduct of that, you might have other things come your way, but it doesn't really work the way that everyone wants it right. to work.
Yeah, only very rarely does that
exactly
happen.
And when it does, I mean, that's I don't even think that's creatively, that's usually not a great thing. I find
they haven't quite developed to the place that they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not an Ozempic for music.
That is a very good way of putting it. Yes. Oh, look at nice, that. Nice. That was the line of the day right there.
Hey, but I'll tell you what, another thing that people, and that I continue to tell myself, and I've really been implementing this is, you know, when you're saying like they just want to be there, they want to be there. I'm putting all this work in and nothing's happening. But the thing about it is to find your joy in the waiting. Like finding your joy in the present moments. Because as musicians, you know, like it's hard because like we're already booking into June of 2026. And so it's like, when you think about it like that, you're always just looking in the future. But you can book in the future, but you have to be present where you're at and enjoy where you're at. And enjoy and celebrate the little moments. And I just think that's a really big deal because you can want something so bad and have your eye on the prize that you can't even see that you have the prize all along. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, that's just something that I've really been working on is being present and enjoying the moments that we're having on our way to the bigger moments that we're going to get.
That's fantastic. Yeah. At least for us, I know, you know, we book out, I do most of our booking. And so usually we're booked out months in advance. And, one of the things that's nice about doing the show, and this sounds kind of silly, but relating to what you were saying, I love that at least once a week, when you sit down and put headphones on and you're hanging out with someone, you've got to be present. Like there's no way mm-hmm. you can do this without fully checking in yeah. to just being in the thing and enjoying mm-hmm. it. And I mean, it's been great. I mean, there's, we've had lots of friends on, we've had lots of, you know, kind of friends, peripheral friends. We've had brand new people that we've never met before. I mean, that's one of the things that's been awesome about this is just meeting so many cool people. But you have to just be present, right? There's no way to like sort of half-ass being present in a conversation, right? If you're not, it shows, you know what I mean? And I think that's one of the things that's actually been kind of a lifesaver with this is, and that's true of music too. I mean, a lot of people have difficulty doing that. Whereas if you get that chance to be on that stage and play, I think that's the only mindset to have. You just have to be appreciative of the fact that, yeah, there's two people in here and they're both drunk and neither of them are listening, but but you get to do the thing. You know what I mean?
I don't miss those days.
Yeah, I know Brian and I have played some gigs in our time, you know?
Oh, we have too.
Been there.
For 10 years we did that. And
when did it start to feel for you two that there was a turning point in this career, for lack of a better word? When did it feel like, okay, there's something here that we can build on? Or are you not there yet? I don't know.
No, it's when we got the tour van mm-hmm. and we went on the road full time.
And
when things changed.
And when first of all, when we made the decision to only, like, to stop doing cover gigs and only do our original music. And that was how many years ago?
Oh, I don't remember. Seven?
Six, oh, really?
Ten?
Wow, I didn't think it was that long.
That's scary, too. I mean, a lot of people don't realize, like, the cover gigs, a lot of them pay the bills. Like, that's a big pivot to make. And that's a hard line to hold if you're going to say, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah. And so that was, like, really... like, okay, we're doing this. And again, I was resistant when he wanted to do that because I was like, well, because I feel like we had to like retrain our fans to ask, to want, to know our music and to want our music and to not ask for someone else's music. Mm-hmm. So that was hard at first, but, because I'd be like, can I just do something, and he'd be like, we just got to stay the path. And so we did. But anyways, so we decided to do that and to go all in was when he got the tour van. And it was after my mom had passed. My mom was sick for 3 years. And so I never wanted to stay away too long because I didn't want to miss any holiday, any birthday, anything. I just because I never knew when it would be her last. And so... it'll be 4 years this month when she passed, and that's really when we were like, okay, we're going all in. So when we got the tour van, and then we decided to go all in doing our on-the-road gigs is really when I feel like we've seen the shift, right? 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's got to be such an exciting feeling to even if you're looking in the bank account, so to speak, and it doesn't seem like it's paying off like crazy. Just to feel that momentum is in your corner, that's such a relief. I mean, so many people in music spend huge portions of their life sort of in the red, so to speak. And just with that weight on you of, is this going to fucking work? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think this is going to fucking work. That had to be such a relief. That had to free up a lot of just stress in one's mind to feel like, okay, we're pointed in the right direction. When you started doing that, so you got the van. I know you had a van prior to that, but you kind of went all in on this.
Yeah.
At that point, were you working with an outside booking agent? Were you doing all the booking yourself? How did you kind of hit the ground running with, okay, we're gonna do this?
We didn't have a booking agent at that time. I was booking everything.
Yep.
And man, I hated booking. I hated booking. I did it for so many years. I'm still doing it, but I've learned to like it a lot more now. But just sometimes you're doing things you don't want to do. You're doing a lot of things you don't want to do.
Yeah.
You're learning a lot of things you don't want to learn.
Yes,
because of necessity.
And it feels like you can almost. You can almost shell yourself off because you think, this isn't the skill I want to be learning.
Right.
When no skill like that is going to be a bad thing to, no tool like that is going to be a bad tool to put in your tool belt,
Oh, for sure, yeah.
When
you're really good at it. He's really good at it.
I mean, you have to be such a jack of all trades
to
be...
He really is.
When you're doing this, or at that point when you were doing this, what kind of gigs were you guys doing? Because, again, I think this is an important thing for people to hear,
Right.
When you start doing this, it's not, people can see the glitz and the glamour of the thing, which is great. And that's so much of what kind of sells on social media, so to speak. But when you were at that point and you did feel like you were going to go all in on this, what were the kinds of venues that you were booking? What were the kind of gigs that were going to make this possible for you?
Yeah. So there was all these markets in the US that we had never played before, and so here we are going out to try to make a name for ourselves, and you're not going to be able to book the ticketed listening rooms or the theaters because you have no history in those places. So it looks like we start out playing the winery or the beer garden outside thing where there's going to be a built-in crowd, and people aren't there for the music, they're there to drink and eat and whatnot, but you're playing and they'll pay you, and you do maybe four of those around the Houston area. I'm just taking Houston as an example. You do four of those around the Houston area just in that week, and then you move on to the next city. But then you come back 5-6 months later, you might have to do that again. But you might try to throw a little bit of a higher profile show in there if you can. But then maybe the third time you come back, which is probably a year after the original time, you might be able to do a songwriter round or maybe a ticketed show, sharing it with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so then you're just continually building slowly and slowly. And we did that for all the markets. I remember playing all those mm-hmm. gigs where we'd set up our sound system in the corner of a patio and... Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You're like 3 hours, playing 3 hours to you know, your cousin and your aunt and your uncle and then a bunch of people that don't even care you're
now,
playing.
Now if we have to play an hour and a half or 2 hours, we're like, geez, so long. We're like, oh, God.
Yeah, you cut your teeth. You're like, okay, we're going I want to know for both of you, what out of all of this process, what is the element of where you're at now that brings you the most joy? What's the part of what you get to do now, whether it's songwriting or performing or what have you, that you really find the most fulfillment in?
You thinking about it?
I mean, in a whole, like the most fulfillment. So getting, for me, I love the live show. I love being on stage with Ben and being able to share our songs and our stories and just connect with that audience. There's nothing like it. And there's nothing like getting to use your gifts with the person that you love. And I don't know, for me, it's all about that. Like I love doing that. I feel so fulfilled. And then afterwards, you know, when we're at the merch table and people are coming up and people are sharing their personal struggles and what they got from our songs, or my mom passing. So I have a song, we have a song about her. And so I feel like every show, people come up and they talk about their mom, or their mom's sick, or they don't have a relationship with their mom and now they want to call her. Because, you know, I just love that, because what we write about, we're storytellers. And so we write about very personal, honest lyrics, things that happen to us or our family or somebody we know. And so being able to connect with that person on such a deep level after the show is really fulfilling to me, too.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, too. Mm-hmm. The personal connection that we have with people, for sure. And the idea that music is such a special experience, in the fact that you're feeling emotions, someone who's listening to music, but it's also coupled with words. And so you can, whether good or bad, you can feed a message into somebody and make them feel something at the same time. That is a powerful combination.
It's lethal. There's very few things, there are very few facets of art that are simultaneously so emotionally provocative,
right,
and so intellectually stimulating. I think music is such a potent, it's such a potent element in the world that you can truly affect people in a way that is, it's very difficult to do in other forms of art.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just, I think music is also just such an innate part of being a human being, that. Yeah, it's almost a lot of power to wield in a creative context because of that.
It is. And it's such a divine thing. I think music is an amazing creation of God, and the way that we can, like she's saying, connect with people and bring people together into a room who don't know each mm-hmm. other, or house concerts that people might be in the neighborhood but have never met before. I love the fact that people are getting physically together and meeting mm-hmm. new people and experiencing that these things together. And we get to see so many friends that we would never see across the country, and relatives across the country. That is so amazing. And I don't know, it's just...
No, it's so beautiful. I really think any excuse... you know, as you go through life, you realize that, you know, weddings and funerals are kind of the best excuse to see people, sadly, a lot of times in life. Mm-hmm. And I think anything else you can establish in life that allows you to to have a good excuse to see people you care about is usually a good thing. Mm-hmm. And whether it's music, whether it's this podcast, what have you, I mean, it's been so nice to have friends in here that we haven't seen in years sometimes that, you know, have been on the road, and that they get to come and sit down and spend an afternoon. Like, that's so nice. And I think the more things in life that one has that can serve that, the better. Because it is such a limited thing that we get to interplay with. And I love that. I love that you can have that vantage point with it and enjoy it in that way. Because I think so many people, they get to be in that routine, but they don't necessarily, it doesn't, just because you're in that routine doesn't mean that you have the mindset to take all of that out of it. I mean, it's
right,
like, it's a hard, I mean, it's hard to tour that much, it's hard to be on the road like that, and if you can view it through that positive lens, I think that's huge. I think that's so amazing. One of the things I'm also wanted to pick your brain about is, you know, you kind of talk about the message of songwriting and how that can be such a potent thing. You know, everyone has a different goal or different goals when you're sitting down to write. Like for myself, songwriting is a purely selfish endeavor, and I don't mean selfish in a derogatory sense. I mean, to me, it's what I get out of songwriting is I write exclusively in character, and so for me, it's an act of sympathy, right? It is like great fiction. It's the ability to force oneself to perceive the world through another's eyes, and to me, that is what I get out of songwriting. It's that sort of forcing oneself to view the world in a different, through a different lens, and so sort of by definition, that's a wholly selfish endeavor. Now other people can experience that and find value in that, and find either the same value or different value in that. But for you two, what are your to say goals almost kind of cheapens it, but what are the goals that you have, or the messages that you look to put into music when you kind of meditate on it in that way?
I think it shifts per song. Some of it for me is like, I mentioned writing about like ironies in life and stuff like that, or inconsistencies, things that I see that I want other people to be like, oh, I see that thing every day, but I've never thought about it in that way.
It's like a good joke almost. It's like there to be found. It's there to be almost discovered, the irony of life. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
And it might be something that when they realize I've never thought about it in that way, they're like, oh, well, what else am I not thinking about that I could open my mind to? And so I think making people think in a way that they haven't before is some of my songs that I've started out go for. But other times it's been, you know, like with the song about your mom, it's been, what do you call that? Just getting the feelings out type thing.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like therapy.
Yeah. Like
therapy. Whenever I'm going through something really hard, but at this moment, we wrote this song for her while she was alive, and it was like one of the last times that she was in the hospital, and just wanting to write a song for her, you know, because throughout my 22 years of living in Nashville and being a solo artist to now, I have always been really honest in my lyrics, and not that I was trying to put a negative light on anything, but I was just honest about my upbringing and what we've been through and my mom and my family. And so I wanted to just write and tell her what she meant to me one last time.
You're not going to find a better reason to do anything. Mm-hmm. Do you feel, with whatever song you're working on, whether it's that or something else, do you ever feel like mission accomplished? I crossed the finish line. I did exactly what I set out to do. Or is it flashes and fragments of that? Do you feel, okay, I got this was right, but I could have done this differently. How does that play out for both of you?
I feel like I've crossed the finish line when I finish when I finish the song, and then the next day I'm like, I have not crossed the finish line.
I thought this was so many times. A week later, I thought this was so good last week.
Damn it! Yeah.
I don't know how to get rid of that thing where we think it's good in the moment, but it's not. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think the only way to do it is kind of to do what you were talking about earlier, which is to just keep doing the thing. You don't want to get into the studio when you've got 10 songs to record. You want to get in the studio when you've written 100 songs, right, and you're going to pick out, okay, what are the ones that I think mm-hmm. I can kind of hang my hat mm-hmm. on? Like, one of the things that's been really nice, I haven't done a full-length album in 5 years. The last full-length we did was my third album that we did third album, which was 5 years ago now. And we've done some singles and stuff that have come out since then, but it's been a long while since we've been in the studio. And it's a strange feeling because that's not how I've ever approached it before. The intervals between my albums have always been much shorter. And so it's kind of a lovely feeling though to think, okay, I get to just put what I perceive to be the best of what I have concocted in the last half a decade in here. That's a really kind of freeing feeling because it allows you to accurately contrast the quality of the thing that you're making, you know? And you can get so lost in it, right? You can get so lost in just trying to get the thing done that when you're, you know, God knows we all have those songs that we sit up, that keep us up at night because we just can't quite tweak them the way we want to. We can't quite finish them. And so to have that sort of distance between yourself and the thing, I'm sure can be hugely productive. I think that's kind of the only way to do it. Cause you're going to make songs that are better. It's hard to determine what's better, but that you perceive to be of higher quality than other songs. If you're right, so like, yeah. I think the only way to do it is to just keep doing it. But yeah.
Persistence.
Yeah. At this point, what's next on the horizon for you guys? You guys are saying that you've got a lot of shows coming up, but what beyond that is sort of on the agenda now?
Well, we're just going to keep touring the same way we are. I'm in the process of building another van.
Yeah.
I love it.
We have another one, and this one's extended cab, so 18 more inches.
Nice.
I get my own closet.
I was going to say you can fit some more merch in there, but there you go. That's even better.
Yeah. Touring. I mean, it's like our life now. We're just touring. That's what we do.
It's been a good year.
Yeah. We're going to try to put like an album out a year is the idea.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's great.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. That's a great goal. I mean, I think there's something to that. I really do think all of my favorite artists, whatever world they work in, they generally have that approach. It's just, we're just going to put something out that's a snapshot of where I'm at the moment. Mm. You know, like whether it's George Carlin saying I'm doing a special a year and just saying this is what I'm doing and this is how I'm going to do it and some are going to be better than others, but this is the process, or you know, whether it's certain musicians or bands or whatever, I think that there's a beauty to that. It makes you just get better at the thing you're trying to get better at,
right. Mm-hmm.
So what are the insane dates you guys have coming up? What's the touring schedule looking like on the horizon here?
Well, let's see, we're hitting the East Coast is the next big tour, the whole East Coast.
We leave we're in and out all of July, but then we leave at the end of July, and I think we're gone for 3 months.
Yeah. Wow. We're like heading straight north through
somewhere. We'll come back
somewhere
for Americana Fest.
Do you guys have like a kind of pattern of touring where you or is it just sort of, is it not patterned out in that way? Like, I'm trying to think of a good way to say that, but do you like to play certain parts of the country at certain times of the year, or is it very random?
It's kind of random. It kind of depends on what
big anchor
festival or whatever has been booked. But we try to hit every market like every 6 months. We won't go back more than twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we say that, but then we go back to Texas.
Texas is so fun. It's so fun.
We can hit Texas a lot.
We can't stay away. It's like we'll be like, no, we're not going to do it. And then we'll get booked to something else. We're like, hey, we're going back.
Yeah.
As you're wearing your Texas shirt right now.
Nice.
Yes, I am.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's a fun. That's a fun, fun state to play in. I love playing
our
in Texas.
Our favorite.
It's a good spot. Well, I got to say, I'm very, very much looking forward to the third album. I'm excited to see kind of like what comes next. This has been such a ball. I mean, I love getting into the kind of the nitty gritty of some of this stuff because, again, I think a lot of what's out there and what's presented to people can be the surface level sort of glitz and glam, and that's great, and that can help, you know, sell tickets, that can help, you know, get people out to shows, which is awesome. But I like showing the struggle of it a little bit and seeing it's hard. I mean, that's what you guys are doing is hard work, and you guys are killing it. So I'm appreciative that you guys could carve out a little time for this. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for letting us pick your brains.
Yeah. Glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
Oh yeah, the song sounded awesome. I'm excited to see them all, you know, finished up. It'll be great.
Yeah, those are going to sound really good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you guys for doing this. That was awesome. That was a ton of fun.